We play the Redneck National Anthem.
Redneck, don't give a darn, a redneck.
Back. Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle.
He left at 6, then it's Katie, bar the door. She pulled down that Navajo rug and she spread it across the floor. Hey, I saw the lightning cross the sacred mountain, saw the woven turtle doves. But I was lying next to Katie on that old Navajo rug.
Aye, 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 she's red and blue. Aye, 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 Katie.
Well, I saw old Jack about a year ago. He said the place burned to the ground. And all I say with this old bare tooth, Katie, she's left town. Papa Katie, she got her souvenir too. Jack's mad at tobacco plug. Well, you should have seen her coming through the smoke, a dragging that Navajo rug.
Aye, aye, aye,
Katie, she's the red and blue.
Aye, aye, aye,
Katie, whatever became of the Navajo rug and you. So every time I cross the sacred mountains and lightning breaks above, it always takes me back in time to my long lost Katie love. But everything keeps on a move, everybody's on the go. Hey, you don't find things that last anymore like an old Navajo.
Aye, aye, aye,
Katie, she's the red and blue.
Aye, aye, aye,
Katie, whatever became of the Navajo rug and you.
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Get your good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. I'm just out off about San Antonio with a radio blastin' and the bird dog on. As the beat travel, my head sound the town, but no local yoga gonna shut me down. 'Cause me and my boys got the trigger.
you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I am kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar. Now I'm smoking in Texas with a hammer down and a rocking little combo from the guitar down.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. Okay, and here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. Wednesday night, one of our nights that we miss Amy terribly. She's not with us tonight, and she's got other obligations she wants to do and decided to take a little rest. But I'll try to amuse you here for as much as I can. Let me check the chat room here and see what's going on. Hey, Long Slide, man, that's... That's a gun I'd like to have, is that Long Slide, that Glock 40 in the 10mm. You know, that's confusing to the great unwashed, to the unknowledgeable. Everybody says a Glock 40. What do you got, a Glock 40? It may be a 23, it may be a 27, it may be a 22, it may be a 35, it may be a 24, but it's a Glock 40. Well, there really is a Glock 40. They got a 6-inch barreled 10mm out now. And it's called the Glock 40. And I didn't ever think they'd do that. I figured that would be too confusing to the great unwashed. But evidently, Master Glock thought it would be an okay thing to do. So he's done it. And they're out. You can purchase them right now. It was when it was first mentioned, people didn't think it would happen, but it very much has happened, and I would love to have one. Tell you what, I'd like to have one of those with a red dot or a scope or something on it. That'd be a great hunting rig right there. Of course, I don't know how much velocity you'd gain. We did quite a bit of testing with 6-inch 10mm with aftermarket barrels. Back in 2007, somewhere along there. I've still got all the chronograph tickets for it. I'll have to drag those out one of these days. And it really wasn't enough to justify the extra length and bulk and weight and everything else. It just wasn't necessary. wasn't all that big a deal. You know, the Glock 20 that I have, the full size Glock. Now I wouldn't mind having one in the same length as the 34 and the 35. That would be a great 10mm length. But the one that I have no problem getting well over 1300 feet a second out of 180 grain bullets. So, you know, that's plenty of stuff for hunting. Deer, even elk size game if you're careful with how you place your shot. So, I see that Ben Carson has dropped out today. It's the field is narrowing down, and it's going to become more these people that were supporting him and some of these other guys. As they drop out, they've got to go somewhere. And Rubio's losing steam awfully quickly. Cruz is kind of holding his own. Kasich is just a token candidate right now. He'll drop out. We know Christie's gone. Christie's back in Trump, which doesn't say too much for Trump. But anyway, it's fixing to get interesting here. Trump has been holding his own. He's doing well. I think he'd do a lot better if he would not be so arrogant and self-centered and quit. Between him and Rubio bouncing around there, calling each other names and talking about how much they sweat and everything, they're wasting, as far as I'm concerned, valuable time that they could be talking about what they're going to do for me when they get in there. But, children must play, so we'll see what happens. We're going to spend some more time tonight on the that deal I started, yesterday, with Lavoie Finicum's daughters, one of his daughters, with that interview she was doing. That's a great interview, and I'm going to play some more of that tonight. But let me see. I forgot to tell you who's in the chat room here. See if there's anybody new. Not that I want to bypass any of my regulars here, because I don't. But got a handful of anonymous, and looks like everybody else is a regular there. So I appreciate each and every one of you being here, and I hope you anonymous feel comfortable and let us know what part of the country you're in and what you do. I found out some of those anonymous are some people that live right down the road here a little ways. And they never get in the chat room. They just listen. They come onto the survivalcircle.com and just listen to the show and then quietly fade away. And that's okay. As long as they listen, we don't care how they do it. Let's see here. Let's start here with this. This might be an interesting thing. We've talked about this before, but there's a story out here about six companies that strongly disagree with having your guns. The title is "You Don't Feel Safe with Guns," and there's six companies here that disagree. And we went to a Buffalo Wild Wings when I was down in Phoenix with Chris Ann Hall, and they had no sign on the door or anything, but they apparently have a policy. Chipotle's, we know, has one. Now they discourage firearms, but they haven't actually banned them. IKEA, and that breaks Amy's heart because she loves IKEA. But world's largest furniture retailer, they they caught a lot of flack here when a guard at a Maryland store told a uniformed police officer he'd need to leave his gun in the car due to the store's gun policy. Well, that went over like a turd in a punch bowl. They followed that up with a statement here that said, "We regret that there is a misunderstanding of our weapon policy in our College Park store. Our weapon policy does not apply to law enforcement officers." You think? We're taking steps to ensure this. Anyway, and I don't spend a lot of time on this. We've talked about some of these companies before. Pete's Coffee and Tea, Whole Foods, they've long time had a no firearms policy. Actually, it goes back to 2001. AMC Theaters, for the safety and security of our guests and associates, and as a family business, AMC feels the best way to protect our guests and associates is to have a uniform, standardized policy prohibiting weapons on our premises and to post such policy. Toys R Us. Remember when the handgun was found in with the toys in a Toys R Us store? Yeah, that went over real well, too. Buffalo Wild Wings respects the rights of individuals to carry firearms. However, because we are focused on the comfort, safety, and enjoyment of all of our guests, we have elected to exercise our right to restrict the carrying firearms within our restaurants. We regret any inconvenience this may cause, but believe this policy is the best interest of our guest and team member. You know, if it sure didn't affect the number of people that were there when I was in there with Chris Ann Hall a couple of weeks ago. They it was packed. I mean, they were making money hand over fist in there. Nobody cared. They come in there to watch the 130 widescreen TVs that were plastered every place. There was a bare piece of wall, and there was a TV screen, all of them with different stuff on them. And nobody cared. But I'll tell you, I specifically looked for a sign on the door when we went in there, and there was not a sign. So it didn't make any difference. I was going in anyway, but I know there was four of us in there that night that were carrying guns, but there was no sign, so we didn't care. They've got a written policy on their website or on the back wall somewhere or something. I don't care. It's not on the door, so we didn't spend any time with it. Well, you guys remember the young lady that was with Lavoie Finicum when he was murdered by your government? What was her name? Victoria Sharp. And she's really rising up there. She's a tough little gal there. She actually made out of the Kansas City Star, and that article come out just 4 or 5 days ago, actually made the Drudge Report. Now, what Victoria Sharp does is she is very much like a young female Lavoie. She's fearless, and she is quite prepared to die for what she believes in, even at 18 years old. She's kind of a fanatic with her religion and stuff, which is okay, I guess. But we had a little problem with her today, and I think we got it resolved. I can't go into details about it, but there was an issue, and then it's not. I think we got part of it resolved, but there's still another big part of it that is not going to be resolved probably until Saturday, and that's unfortunate. But anyway, the broadcast in one of all these YouTube videos that she's posted here in the last 4 or 5 weeks, Victoria Sharp is one of the online broadcasters here has offered to produce the Victoria Sharp Show, if you can believe it, and it would cater to the Patriot movement, and it would probably do pretty well, at least for a while. I don't know how long they could keep it going, but as far as hosting the show, she said she needed time to rest after all this stuff that's gone on and all that, and she was actually in the truck and saw Lavoie get shot, and of course the feds took all the cell phones and everything that were available there that they had filmed some of that, so obviously we're not ever going to see what really happened from the Patriots' standpoint there. And this whole thing about not releasing the video, and people just, you know, nobody is showing up with pitchforks and shovels here and AK-47s and insisting that some more of this video be released. You know good and well there's pictures. If you look at some of the still pictures in there, or even some of the video that was cleaned up, there's video and still pictures that shows personal little cameras on the helmets of some of those jackbooted thugs there. And I know beyond a doubt, and you do too, and they know we know, that there's a lot more video out there from different angles and stuff. And there was a good point made here the other day that further lends credence to the fact that he was ambushed and that they were that it was very much premeditated and set up and ready to do it. And that is the fact that they were not firing from behind cover. They just walked right out fearlessly right to him and started shooting. That's not typically the way those kind of stops go down. If there was any fear, any idea whatsoever that the person might have been armed, they would have stayed behind cover. And long slide, we'll get to that in a little bit. Probably in the second half of the hour. I promised him we were going to talk about the 300 Win Mag a little bit tonight, so we'll get to that here shortly. After the break at the bottom of the hour. So we've got about 10 minutes to the bottom of the hour, so I want to play a little bit more of this. I've got it stopped right where we left off last night. So we're going to play a little bit more of this. This is Tara Tenney, who is one of LaVoy's daughters. And she was on a show. I forgot what the name of it was. Maybe it'll mention it here during a break. We stopped right out of break, so we'll take off from there. Here you go.
Naked Truth segment every Thursday, 10 to noon, where we think right and wrong, not right and left. Sponsored by Patriot Mobile. People are asking us how they can join our grassroots network. A daughter of assassinated rancher and protester LaVoy Finicum. Thanks again for joining us, Tara.
Thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate being able to speak to your listeners.
Yeah, we're glad to have you be able to talk to people. It's important for them to hear what you're talking about. Before we went to the break, we were talking about how much your father studied what the founding fathers taught, studied what the principles of the Constitution were, and what it laid out, and what it said that the government could and could not do. And another thing I wanted to kind of emphasize again is you talked about who your father really was and how he was willing to put his money where his mouth is, so to say. You know, he was walking the walk, not just talking the talk. How he sent the letter off to the BLM telling them that they couldn't tell him how to control his land anymore. I think that's something that because there's a narrative out there that's saying that these people are welfare ranchers, that they're just mooching off of the government when it's
out. Yes. He canceled all of his contracts with the Bureau of Land Management. And not only did he say that he did no longer need their management and that it was federal overreach to have them regulate him, but he did say that he was going to be paying a production tax to his county so that his production could further the success and prosperity of his county. And so that production tax of 3% that he said that he was going to be paying was actually a higher fee than what he was paying for to the BLM. So anybody who claims that they're freeloaders, it's comical, really.
It's frankly ridiculous, and it's not factual by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. And I wanted to just go back to what they were doing in Oregon.
Yeah,
if that's okay.
Yes.
They were... The narrative was that they were terrorists and that they were, you know, guns a-blazing, and that's comical to me too because I know who my dad is, and that's so far from the truth. The cowboys were peacefully participating in civil disobedience to petition the government for a redress of grievances, which is their First Amendment right.
Right.
And they were exercising their Second Amendment right to bear arms to protect themselves against a tyrannical government. Let's go back to the Bundy experience that happened just a few years ago that my dad was a part of. Let's ask, who was pointing guns at who in that experience?
Right.
Who was terrorizing who in that experience? Who was pepper spraying and tasing who in that experience?
If it was the ranchers, they would have been shot and imprisoned.
But it was the government. The only reason why that was not a bloodbath is because there was rolling live cameras.
Right.
Documenting the whole experience. And so these men who were in that experience 2 years or how, I don't know the exact date, I need to get that information down. Down. But in the Bundy experience a few years ago, they're courageously now standing up to continual federal overreach in support of the Hammond family in Oregon. And wouldn't it be foolish of them, after experiencing the federal overreach and the abuse that they received over there, to not exercise their Second Amendment right while exercising their First Amendment right? That would just be foolish, because they would have been taken out, not taken seriously, and treated the same way that they were over there in Bundyville. And so in regard to the people who say, oh, they shouldn't have taken their guns and it escalated the situation, well, that's my response to that.
Well, a right not exercised is a right lost, and everyone at all times has the right to exercise their Second Amendment right. So it's
absolutely
even sillier to say they can't have it really any time. So it's really a mute argument.
Right. And my father, Lavoie Finicum, and the other cowboys were in no way what the media, the mainstream media, has characterized them to be. Their days in Oregon were spent with meeting with people, teaching people, welcoming them, giving ranchers who have been terrorized and threatened and bullied, giving them courage that they too can reclaim their property.
You know, I think that's really what you just said. What they were really doing was educating people. They were having Constitution classes. That's a common thing we see all around Utah and other states. People, you know, you take out the library or in their homes, they teach Constitution classes to their neighbors. And ultimately, that's what your dad was doing on a larger scale. He was teaching
absolutely
these principles, and that's what made him a threat, was just teaching about our founding principles. And because he was teaching in a certain place where the people listening happened to the government wanted their land. And so it's not as big of a threat when we teach the Constitution at the library, you know, in Salt Lake City, Utah, because those people aren't going to go and say, government, you can't have my land. But those people had assets that the government wanted, and they couldn't have them learning their rights.
And actually implying.
Exactly. I couldn't have said that better myself. Often, in communicating with my mom, Dad would say, I have never taught so much in my entire life. Even when I was on my church mission, I have never taught as much as I am teaching now. I am on a teaching mission. And the day that my dad was assassinated, they were in transit to the neighboring county, Grant County. And the Grant County Sheriff, Glenn Palmer, had actually gathered a large number of his citizens into a facility to hear these cowboys' message of hope. And, well, we all know the story. They were in transit, and we've all seen the horrific scene of my father being gunned down with his hands in surrender up in the air. And it's significant to note that it's significant to know that Oregon's United States Senator Ron Wyden, if that's how you pronounce his last name,
Wyden,
stated, we have got to stop this virus before it spreads, shortly
right
before my father was
he called
murdered.
Freedom
I
a
ask
virus.
You, what is this virus he's talking about? This virus is truth, enlightening the minds of the citizens to know what their rights actually are so that they can act instead of be acted upon.
Exactly.
So that they can have courage to stand up for their property rights. That's the virus that he was talking
That's
about.
The virus.
Because it was threatening his purse, his dollar bill. Now,
and his power.
And his power, yeah. Also, Oregon Governor Kate Brown also made a statement that says, let me get to it. I have it written down because I don't have it memorized yet. You'll have to forgive me.
That's fine. I think it's important that as you're looking for that, for us to recognize what it is that these people are saying, that it's a threat to the power structure to not just, you know, we talk about being doers of the word and not hearers only. it's important that we understand. We need to know. We need to learn, but we need to apply what we've learned. Otherwise, it doesn't do anybody any good. And so
that's
what the big threat is when we start applying these principles. The founding fathers meeting together to discuss the ideas of liberty and of history didn't scare the crown. It was when they actually started applying those principles. And the state senator, I mean, the U.S. Senator Wyden calling liberty a virus is very telling.
It's very telling. And I just found it, Oregon Governor Kate Brown boldly invoking authorities a few days before my father's murder by saying, "The bottom line is that federal authorities must move quickly to end this occupation and to hold all these wrongdoers accountable." Now, and then she further goes on and says, "Because the situation is absolutely intolerable." Now, let's just review what Governor Kate Brown's responsibility is. It is her duty to hear the people's petition to the government for a redress of grievances.
Right.
It is her duty to tolerate and hear such redress. The fact that she's calling them wrongdoers and how their conduct is absolutely intolerable, that's also very telling.
It's wrongdoing to apply the Constitution and enforce it, according to
the
people in power now. Which means they're totally illegitimate. And the people that they're putting in jail, it's interesting. I've looked at the...
All right, let's pick up there again. We'll finish that up tomorrow night, and it's the end of it's pretty good. So we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the 300 Win Mag a little bit, because I promised Longside we'd do that, and I've actually had this in the lineup for like a month, wanting to talk about it, and there's just been so many. Actually, it's almost exactly a month, maybe 5 weeks, 5 or 6 weeks. Because I was going to talk about this about the time things started to unfold in Oregon, and it's been sitting in the wings ever since. So we're going to talk about one thing we're not going to do is we're not going to ever forget what Lavoie Finicum died for and who Lavoie Finicum was. There's going to be something on this show that's going to jog your memory about Lavoie Finicum from now on. I don't ever want that forgotten. So be prepared. Anyway. All right. Let's take a little break, and we'll come back here shortly. Stand by 1 second here. I wasn't quite as ready as I thought I was, so.
I'll be back.
We're very pleased to have Admiral James Lyons with us. Sir, welcome.
Well, thank you, Frank. Sorry I missed the earlier presentations due to my 3-hour and 20-minute commute this morning. But, you know, as a number of you heard me say before, we've had many opportunities to change the course of history. And it hasn't mattered whether it's been a Republican or Democratic administration. We failed every one of them, starting with Carter, with the takeover of our embassy. We could have cut off Khomeini and his Islamic fundamentalism at the knees. We were going to take Carg Island, and he rejected it. We could have walked in. The next time was the Marine Barracks bombing. And you all probably wonder why we never responded. I won't go into the long detail, but the guy that sabotaged the strike, and I'm glad you're all sitting down, was the Secretary of Defense. Not once, but twice. Reagan approved the French wanted to do a combined strike, and Reagan approved it, and Weinberger wouldn't issue the order. I have personally talked to George Shultz and Bud McFarlane. They told me they pleaded with him, and he wouldn't do it. You have to say, who the hell got to him, or what got to him? I've never been able to get an answer on that. In the Gulf Tanker War in 87, we were going to bring down the Khomeini regime. You know, and the guy that sabotaged, I had Brief Weinberger at my headquarters at Pearl Harbor. that summer. And this was going to be in August of 87. And the one who undercut us the most was our own chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Crowe, at the time. You know, if you go forward and you look at, you know, we shot down by accident that Iranian civilian airliner a few months later. And what did Khomeini do? He said, I'm drinking from the chalice of poison. And he said, I have to make a truce with Saddam Hussein because the Americans have shown they're coming in on Iraq's side. Well, think of what the hell we could have done had we executed the strike we wanted to do in August of 87. You know, we all say we have to identify the threat. Well, I think the one who identified it the best was Erdogan from Turkey when he said, Islam is Islam. There are no modifiers. Democracy is the train we ride to our ultimate objective. He couldn't have said it any plainer. And until you recognize that Islam is a political movement masquerading as a religion, you're never going to come to grips with it. And as far as a strategy, let me just conclude one thing, and as I just had in my latest op-ed. The Obama administration has a strategy. It's very simple. Any thinking American should be able to grasp it. It's anti-American, anti-Western, it's pro-Islamic, it's pro-Iranian, and pro-Muslim Brotherhood. And with that, I'll yield the mic.
Thank you, sir.
Are you going to agree? Our freedoms are waning and we'll lose our liberty. Slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So, brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lying in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me
there. All right. I'm amazed at that song. They did that so soon after their father's death. And you might think, well, you know, some people are not as close to their father as others. You've never seen a family as close as this one, or any closer, let's put it that way. Amazing family. Anyway, let's get on here with the 300 Win Mag a little bit. This guy, it's not the most conclusive test that I've ever seen for several reasons. But it gives a pretty good idea of, it confirms a lot of things that we've talked about here on the show. We've talked about it usually with 308s and 223s and handguns and stuff like that. We've never really gotten into some of the heavier hitters. Not that 300 Win Mag would be considered a heavy hitter compared to some of them out there, but it's got a pretty good little stomp to it out there.
So this guy took a, let's get a little bit of history real quick. The 300 Win Mag come out in 1963, and it was based on the 375 H&H case, as quite a few other cartridges were during the day there. And so what they did was shortened it to fit a what we'd call a long action now, and necked it down to 30 caliber. Pretty simple process. And they the military's using it pretty extensively now in the M24 sniper system, and the M13 I think too. Also. So the question gets asked: how short can you make the barrel? Obviously, when people start shooting magnums, they ordinarily the common thought here is that you need a longer barrel to make it work properly. Well, yes and no. You need enough barrel for all the powder to burn up. You get these big, heavy magnum charges, and you're going to start shortening barrels. You're going to need to start looking at getting a different burning rate of powder. You want your powder to burn faster, so more of it burns up because there's less runway behind the bullet, you know, for the powder to burn up. Well, they use the same ammunition throughout this test. To make it fair, they weren't trying to get performance out of the gun. They were just trying to find out what the velocity loss was. Now, their velocity could be increased, I'm sure, in the shorter barrel lengths had they gone to a faster burning powder. But they, another thing that they didn't do was they didn't crown the barrel at all. They cut it off an inch at a time. They started out with a 24 and a quarter inch barrel and took it down to a 16 and a quarter inch barrel. So they took off 8 inches of it. And they took a, a Sawzall out there with a metal blade in it and run it until they run out of battery. And since there's no power out there, then they resorted to a hacksaw to finish the rest of it. You start attacking heavy bull barrels with a hacksaw, you're undertaking a pretty good chore on some of them. But anyway, they got it done. But they didn't do any crowning at all. They didn't remove the burrs. They just cut it off an inch at a time and shot it. And there's another point to that that we'll talk about towards the end of this. So they here's the specifics of everything they used. They did it with a Remington 700 Magnum action and a Schillen number 8 1 in 10 twist barrel blank, and talks about the mounts and all that stuff. They used a Leopold Mark 6 3-18 scope, and you know, the scope was there. I don't know how relevant it was to the testing, but and they also used Federal gold metal match 190 grain bullets so that they kept everything very consistent. So what they did, the protocol for the test was pretty simple. They fired everything at 100 yards from a bipod with a rear bag for 5 rounds. And shooting off of a bipod obviously is not the most accurate they could be. I'm a little surprised that they didn't have sandbags under the front. Some bipods obviously better than others, but I think if you're really looking to get the best, be the best that you can be, then a good sandbag rest in that front would be better. And they only fired 5 rounds with each inch that they took off. So that was not a real conclusive test, but it gives a pretty good idea of how much velocity was lost or gained or whatever. The velocity and the standard deviation was recorded after every every test fire, every inch. And then they pulled the bolt out of it, made it safe, and cut another inch off. They bore sighted it at 50 yards and then moved it out to 100 to get it zeroed properly, which Ordinarily, I would think that this was not even going to be much of a concern, but when we get to the end of this, it really made a difference. So they started testing. They did their first shots with a 24 1/4 inch barrel, and like I said, they didn't redo the crown or anything. So it was 55 degrees, heavy rain, overcast, 5-10 mile an hour winds. Not really conducive to great accuracy testing, but I was a little surprised what happened there. But anyhow, let me go over here real quick before we go any farther and see what's going on. In Edge of the Woods will be joining us from the corner for a little while. Welcome, buddy. I'm glad you made it. So let's just look at the velocities here. The starting velocity was 2,892 feet per second. Remember, this is a 24 1/4 inch barrel, 190 grain bullets. 2,892, not bad. After they took an inch off of it, it was 2,851, 2,786. 2789. Now, this tells me, as we go over here and look at the change in feet per second in velocity, we had a negative 41 feet with the first cut, a negative 65 with the second cut. The third cut was a positive 3, plus 3. So what I get out of this with such a, you know, like I said, this test is not very conclusive. It may have been different if they had shot, 10 rounds and cleaned the barrel and all that. A lot of things they could have done to make this more legitimate. But it actually jumped up there. So one of the things that may have caused this is the fact that 21 1/4 inches is the barrel length for the 300 Win Mag. You know, everything has an optimum barrel length. It is that optimum barrel length is right at that point where all the powder burns up right as the bullet exits the barrel. If it's too long, the powder burns up beforehand, and that means that the bullet is traveling under its own just the momentum of it, and nothing's pushing it except the speed that it was already going, if that makes sense. I'm probably not explaining that very well, but it didn't have anything pushing it anymore. If the barrel is too short, then a lot of that powder burns up outside the barrel, and the bullet doesn't benefit from the burning powder, from the expanding gases in there. Many, they were just cutting it up simply to see how it did with different length barrels. That was their only reason for it. C7, if you know anybody that has a 300 Remington Ultra Mag that's looking for some ammo, I have 5 boxes that I'll sell real cheap. Brand new factory stuff. I also have a couple of boxes of Remington, the short Ultra Mag. I have 2 boxes of that. Let's see where you've shot one there. So if you know somebody that has one, well, let me know. So at that point, it seems to me that may have been the optimum barrel length, because then when they cut off another inch, it went right back to where it was, roughly, and that was a negative 37. Negative 25, negative 31, negative 56, negative 65 at the shortest length at 16 1/4 inches. We had 2,575 feet per second, as opposed to, at the beginning, 2,892 feet per second. So we lost basically 300 feet, almost 320 feet there, out of an 8-inch cut or 8 inches removed. So if we did, let's take a look at that here. Come on, if I can get my calculator to work. Come on, there it comes, slowly coming around. All right. So if we had, let's do 2892 minus 2575 equal. No. That's not what we wanted to see. 2892 minus 2575. That looks better. 317 feet. Okay. If we divide that by 8, we have an average of 39 5/8, 39.625 feet per second per inch that they took off. So that's pretty close. I've always told you on this show that the average, there are some dramatic differences in some calibers and quality of barrels, but the average is between 35 and 50 feet per second per inch of either loss or gain as you shorten or lengthen a barrel. I don't mean lengthen like weld that inch back on. I mean just take a longer barrel. So that's what we've got there. So we've lost 300 feet per second at 16 1/4 inches. Now the accuracy, I think who was it? Long Slide said we would, or one of you up there said we might lose some accuracy with leaving the burrs on the barrel. Certainly you would lose some. And let me read what's going on here. Yeah, it looked like just a carbon steel barrel there. But yeah, if you're talking about the things that affect the weight, yeah, it does make a difference whether it's stainless or carbon steel. So the accuracy, it looks like the factory barrel was just a hair under an inch, 947 thousandths of an inch. When they cut off the first inch, their next group was under 3/4 inch at 725. And then it was 744, still under 3/4 inch on the third cut. The fourth cut was almost 2 inches, 1.799, 1.8 inches. And then it would drop down again with the next cut. When it was 20 inches long, it was 930, under an inch again. And then a little less than an inch and a half, a little less than an inch and a half. By the seventh cut, it was right at 7/8 inch. And the last one at 16 1/4 inches was an inch, 1.3 inch, 1.35. So the average group through all of this was 1.12 inches. You know, at a 190 grain bullet at almost 2,600 feet a second, I think that, if this was my gun, I think probably that about that 18 inch mark was where I would have stopped. If I was doing this for a gun that I wanted to keep. The 18 inch barrel is, pretty easy to maneuver and everything, and we're getting right at 2,700 feet a second out of that. And with a 190 grain bullet, I can damn sure live with 2,700 feet a second. Group size was 1.3 inches. Doesn't say a whole lot because there's so many factors there that could change that. Shooting 5 rounds one time is not a very conclusive test. But what it does show is that shortening the barrel, as we've all been told all our lives, up until the last few years here, is that the longer barrels are more accurate. And it's just been the last few years that they've determined that these shorter barrels are stiffer. They don't whip as much as the longer barrels do. And even though they're sacrificing a little velocity, they're picking up a great deal of velocity, of accuracy. quite a bit of difference in those shorter barrels. When I took that 700 PSS that I had and cut it from 20, I had a 26-inch barrel on it. And it was unwieldy. I didn't like it. And it didn't shoot all that well. For supposed to be a highly accurate rifle, you know, it was, it'd shoot better than an inch. But hell, I can shoot better than an inch with damn near every long gun I got. So I wasn't too impressed with it, but I tell you what, when I cut it down to 19 inches, that gun would shoot. It was stacking them up, one on top of the other, and five-round groups at 100 yards then became, you know, 3/8, 7/16 of an inch, something like that. Thanks, me. And so I would certainly be willing to sacrifice a little velocity for the degree of accuracy that we got out of that. But that's just me. You know, there's also the other side of that coin, the other group of people that think velocity is king, and they're willing to sacrifice accuracy to make it go faster. I am not. No. I learned that with my 223 back in, you know, good Lord, long time ago when I was stationed at Fort Irwin. I went out and I probably told you this before, but went out with and I was kind of the opinion that fast was good at the time too. But I had a kind of a long-barreled Savage. I believe it was called a 110J, if I'm not mistaken. Old single-shot Savage. And the receiver was solid. It wasn't a regular receiver that was welded up to make a single shot. And hang on a second. There we go. Okay, it was my best shot with that one. I think I told you was 136 thousandths of an inch with that, and I achieved that by downloading what I was doing. I got down to I don't remember for sure. Don't quote me on this, and don't use it until you check it. But I think it was 21 grains of 4198. I think. Whatever it was about 250 feet a second slower than what I had been shooting. But son, I want to tell you what, when I slowed that thing down, it literally stacked them one on top of the other. 136 thousandths of an inch at 100 yards is nothing to sneeze at. And I did not ever achieve that degree of accuracy until I slowed that bullet way down. So, the long slide, a factory 18-inch barrel, well, I would have to assume, not having one to test, I would have to assume that the results wouldn't be too much different than this one. The factory 18-inch, probably the velocity is going to be about the same, give or take, you know, maybe 10 or 20 feet a second because of the crappy cut and not removing the burrs and stuff like that. But 2,700 feet with an 18-inch barrel and a 1.3-inch group, and the group would get better, obviously, with a clean barrel. By the time they got there, they'd already fired 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. That would have been from the 30 to the 35th round without cleaning. So clean barrel, one that, remember, also this was a brand new barrel, I forgot to tell you. This was a gun that had previously been unfired. So, you know, fire lap that barrel or shoot it enough to smooth it out a little bit, get it properly crowned, properly sandbagged up, and I'm sure that group would at least be cut in half, and you'd probably get 27 and a quarter, 27.50 out of it. And I can live with that. With a 190 grain bullet, yes, ma'am, that would be just fine. You put 165 grain in there, and you're probably looking at 3,200 feet a second, something like that. So, I would opt for the 18-inch barrel, I think, especially if I was carrying it very far. But let's see. See if there's anything else significant here that I need to... There's a little graph here. Let's see. So what does this mean downrange? Let's take a look at the drop and drift at 1,000 yards. So this is the 1,000 yards obviously is the beer joint and the internet's favorite distance there. So assuming 100 yard zero with a full value 10 mile an hour crosswind, with the full length barrel, 24 and a quarter inch barrel, it would drop 306.5 inches, and it would be blown off course by 56.8 inches. Velocity at 1,000 yards, still 1,400 feet a second. Okay, let's just skip all these other ones here and go on down to the 16. Let's look at the 18-inch for the heck of it. The 18-inch was what Long Slide was asking about. So we've got the drop here. The path is going to be 362.5 inches, which is, what, 58 inches, 56 inches, something like that, difference. The drift... Remember, we've got a 10-mile-an-hour crosswind here. The drift is 64 inches. So at 1,000 yards, there's only 8-inch difference in wind drift, digging down to an 8-inch barrel. And the velocity is at 1,259, which is 140 feet slower than the full-length barrel. The short barrel, now we're exactly 100 inches more drop, 406.6 inches as opposed to 306.5, so tenth of an inch difference. The drift now, 69 inches, so there's 13 inches difference there, a little less than 13 inches. The velocity at 1,000 yards, still just under 1,200 feet a second, so we've really, at that range... We've only lost just a smidge over 200 feet a second. So the shorter barrel at that range didn't make nearly the difference that it did at the muzzle. Looking at 1,200 versus 1,400 there. So, kind of interesting. Now we've got some other graphs here that don't really tell a whole lot unless you're... looking at them. Point blank range ranged from, with the full length barrel, ranged from 320, probably 26, 27 feet per second. I mean, yards, 327, 330 yards, somewhere in there. With, and 16 inch barrel is at 293 yards. And your point blank range is at whatever range that you can keep it in an 8-inch circle without holding over or anything. Basically paper plate size. The noise, I'm sure, they said firing this gun with the 24-inch barrel was pretty pleasant with the belted magnum. Recoil and muzzle blast increased significantly. I bet you it did. It said the 16 and a quarter inch barrel made my shooting buddy laugh. He said the ground 15 feet in front of the muzzle was blowing around, and I developed a mild headache from the 50 rounds of ammunition that I shot despite wearing both plugs and muffs. The shorter barrels, you know, I've shot 12-inch 223s, 16-inch 7.62 by 39. When you get into those short barrels with those calibers, it is horrendous, unbelievable, indescribable, the noise that makes. I cannot even imagine what that 16-inch 300 Win Mag did. What that is going to do is ensure maximum hearing loss if you don't wear hearing protection when you're hunting. You know, a lot of people hunt and they say, we're only going to shoot once or twice, not a big deal. Buddy, let me tell you, you take that 16-inch 300 Win Mag, it's going to be a big deal. You're going to come home the first day and say, huh? It's probably going to take you a while for the ringing to quit. Not a joke. Take your hearing protection. And you know, the best thing to do is wear electronic hearing protection, especially if you're stalking and you're getting up to where you think you're about ready to shoot. Put your electronic hearing protection on. You can still hear what's going on around you and knock out a bunch of that muzzle blast. You may not get all of it with a short gun like that, but I think there's a healthy compromise there that's not a bad thing. All right, well, that's the 300 Win Mag. We got some other stories I was going to go over, but we didn't get to them, so that's okay because tomorrow is another day. Amy will be with us tomorrow. Don't forget, on the 12th and 13th of this month, Personal Defense Handgun 2 down in Buckeye, Arizona. 18th and 19th, Long Range Handgun. That will be either here or Buckeye, not sure yet. And I'm doing this all from memory here. April 1st and 2nd will be designated rifleman class, also in Buckeye. And then we've skipped a little bit. We're gonna fill some of these in. We're not leaving them out. That's what I have right now. Arms Expo up in Washington. That is going to be on 17th, 18th, and 19th, I believe, of June. And the following weekend, I think it's the 24th, 25th, and 26th, we'll be doing Personal Defense Handgun 3 up there with a night shoot. And also, they're trying to talk me into doing a Counter-Strike class up there. And we probably will. It'll probably be over two consecutive evenings, about 3 hours or so each evening. I'll think about that and see what we can do. But we've had several requests for it, so we'll probably wind up doing that also. I'll get that on the schedule here sometime this week. So, what are we looking at? C7 radio recommend. Right now, a new one has just come out. The UV82HP stands for high power. That HP has, I believe, 1, 5, and 7 watts. People think that 2 watts don't make much of a difference. 2 watts makes much of a difference. It's the difference between reaching somebody and not. And we worked on this coming back from a rancher's place down in southern New Mexico. And there was times when we just barely out of reach. One more watt would have meant, you know, 5-10 more miles probably five more miles at that terrain of reception there, and transmission too, as far as that goes. So yeah, a couple of watts is going to make a difference. These little radios are about $63 on Amazon, a little more, a little less. Look for different vendors. They program the same way. They do everything just like the regular 82s. I've got two of the 82s. I love them. They're great little radios. If I get any more, when I get some more from this point on, I will definitely get the 82HP. Looking forward to that. They're really rugged little radios. Got a tremendous amount of accessories to go with them. You can do so much with these things. And to get right down to it, the UV5R, there's still nothing wrong with the little radio. It doesn't have as many features as the other one does. Well, it does, too. It's got about the same features. But the 82 is a little easier to operate. It has a longer-lasting standard battery, and there's just a lot of other things about it that make it superior, in my mind, over the UV5R. But if money is an issue, get the UV5R and don't feel bad about it, because they do just fine. You can buy those, especially if you buy them in bulk, buy 5 or 10 of them. Hell, you can get them down to, you know, less than 20, around 20, 25 bucks. Can't hardly beat that. $30 at the max, $30, $32. So, well, there you have it. I'm way over time here, so I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here, and I appreciate y'all joining me tonight, and we'll get with you again tomorrow night. Thanks a bunch. Okay, let's call it a day, and thank you for joining me. Join me every Monday through Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time for The Shooting Bench, right here on Just Measures Radio Network. Let's free.